Good Monday evening to everybody. I am your host, Charles Levi, also known as Redfish Chuck. I've already got almost a packed chat room, and I've got a bunch of folks hanging on the line, and we'll get to that in just a second. I appreciate you, as always, joining me on a Monday night, as opposed to watching some football or listening to me and watching football on mute. We got the Rams and Giants tonight. That should be a pretty interesting game. Hopefully the Giants can finally win one. Real quick, goings-ons that I want to kind of address real fast. Our very own D. Kaminsky won the Coastal Redfish Tour Titusville event this past weekend. So, way to go to D. I'm missing my D's. Yay. Hold on, here it goes. Yeah. And it was a very interesting win. For those of you that don't know the story, if she joins us tonight, I'll allow her to tell it. And then also this week we've got the Indian River Paddle Classic, which is going to take place down in Melbourne. The captain's meeting is this Friday. I believe it starts at 7 o'clock at Strike Zone down in Melbourne. And the tournament starts Saturday. It's a redfish trout tournament. Biggest fish or biggest slam wins. There's a bunch of really good sponsors who have stepped up and donated some really good prizes. So it should be an interesting event. I think I'm actually going to fish this one. So it'll be interesting. Going to give you guys a quick rundown of what we're going to talk about tonight. Kind of give you an idea. We'll talk about some flounder fishing. There's a story going around. Actually, I know it's true. I saw a picture of a gentleman that caught a 17.2-pound flounder in Port Canaveral.
So, 7 inches?
No, that's 28 inches. So take that.
Wow.
Take that, Virginia Beach.
be a state record.
That thing was an absolute monster. And I got to hear the story of the fisherman who caught it on another radio show during Saturday morning. And, man, that's awesome. You know, what can you say about a 17-pound flounder? That's just crazy. We're going to talk a little bit about Spanish mackerel fishing. As you can, some of us down here in Florida can feel there's a little bit of a change in the air coming. Seems like it's going to start cooling down. Those mullet are starting to show up. So it's going to be getting close to time to catching Spanish mackerel over here on the Space Coast. I have now fell in love with ditch fishing. And don't judge me for it. It's awesome. I found an area that's been holding some tarpon, some other game fish. So we're going to get into that a little bit. Ways to find those fish in ditches or in canals, if you want to get technical. Talk about the heat that's still relatively around. I guess no matter really what time of year it is down here in Florida, you really got to take care of yourself. As far as, you know, staying hydrated and stuff. I had an incident while I was catching those tarpon. We're going to get into that later on too. So, but without further ado, my panel of experts consists of Rob a Bad Badcast. How are you doing, buddy?
Hey, what's up, man?
Glad to have you on, brother, as always. Chip
Glad
Gibson.
To be here.
I'm here.
The
Not
Godfather.
Much of an expert.
Yeah.
I'm the dumb idea guy.
And Bill Haywood. Appreciate Bill
What's
being
happening?
on the phone there for me.
I just looked up the Florida state record for flounder, and he was 3 pounds short.
Oh, really? Was it 20 pounds?
Wow.
Over 20 pounds.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
That's a big flounder.
That's a halibut, man. That's a lost halibut is what that
is. That's ridiculous.
But I got a special guest on the line with us tonight. I've been trying to get these folks on board for a few weeks now, and scheduling conflicts have kept it from happening. We finally got them on. I got Jason from Flytooth Fly Lines joining us tonight. How are you doing tonight, Jason?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
That's good to have you here, buddy. Good to have you here. There's a lot of us kayak fishermen that are fly fishermen, believe it or not. It can be done. It can be done, and it can be done quite well, especially for those of us that like to stand up. So it's good to have you on board, and I always like to hear from new and exciting companies that are breaking into the market. But why don't you go ahead and give us a quick little rundown about how long you guys have been in existence and you know, what you guys are kind of all about.
Okay. Flytooth started as a simple idea. I just didn't like where what I was seeing coming out. There's been a huge push going into textured lines. And to me, that's completely the wrong direction. I just can't imagine how there's any aerodynamics catching the wind. So that was the simple idea that started the whole thing. And then the second piece was I just couldn't stomach paying $100 for a line anymore. To me, that just seems silly. And from there, we just started pursuing how to get these things made to what we were looking for. We've been working at this with the lines for almost 2 years now. We've been public or available to the public for almost a year, and we really had our grand opening launch about the 1st of March. And since then, it's just exploded, and hence the scheduling conflicts that you were mentioning.
Yeah, yeah.
And it has not slowed down since.
Listen, man, there's nothing wrong with that. That is awesome. I guess it's the best you can hope for in this economy is to be busy.
Absolutely.
You know? So that's good, man. You're blessed.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
So what line classes are you guys doing? Are you running the whole gamut, or have you kind of just started off slow, or you know,
we are very much starting off slow. Right now we are limiting ourselves to weight forward in weights 4 through 12. We have floating, sinking, and sinking tip. Outside of that, right now we are we're looking at some intermediates now, and we'll probably follow up with double tapers and get into some bicolors next year.
Oh, that's awesome, man. I'm looking at your website actually as we speak. And for those of you that can do that while you're listening to the show, it's flytooth.net. So go ahead and jump on there, on their website there. Check them out. They're on Facebook. You know, become a friend of theirs. I'm looking at your Razor Strike limited edition lines. What's that all about?
Razor Strike is the model of the of the line, this first set of lines that we've produced, with more following up. We've got some more coming out next year. It'll be another model number coming out. We have a group out of New York that's working on the marketing and getting all the legal side of that taken care of right now.
Awesome, man. That floating line of yours, the Razor Strike floating line, does that float much like a bass taper? Like real high?
It floats very... It floats very high. My holy grail is river for rainbow trout. I'm not so much big on the bass fishing. Have done a bit with our own line lake fishing, but it's a very high floating slick coated line.
All right, cool. Rob, I know you're a fly fisherman, much like myself. What do you prefer in a line, bud?
I like a weight forward floating. You know, being in, you know, fishing in 3 feet of water most of the time, you know, I don't really have a use for a sink tip unless I'm like beach fishing for snook. Cause then you know, if it's too wavy out there or something, the floating line is no good. I like a weight forward floating, 8 weight, bright colored so I can see it.
Huh.
A lot of people are going with camouflage or sand color or, you know, weed color and everything. And I like bright colors. I like to be able to see it.
And with that being said...
And that's another area...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say that's another area that we tackled in that it was a very conscious decision from the start that anything that floats is 100% bright. Anything that sinks is darker colors. Surprisingly,
yeah.
My worst color that I hate this color is orange, but that's been the number one thing going out the door.
Yeah, orange is a pretty popular line down here, believe it or not. I see a lot of guys throwing orange lines. I don't really have a preference, to be honest with you. I'm actually looking at the blue line you have here on your website. That looks pretty sick. And I'm only saying that because it would match the rod a little bit. I know how stupid that sounds, but that's a pretty cool color.
Well, you'll have to give me an address, and I'll get you one over.
Oh, I appreciate that, buddy. So Have you done any saltwater fishing or fly fishing?
I have not. I personally have not. It's actually a dream of mine. You know, I see these huge monsters being landed, and here I am catching little 12, 18-inch trout. I mean, again, it's still my holy grail, but I would love to land a monster.
Yeah, we. Anytime that you can make it down here, buddy, I would assure you that I can get you on a boat or in a kayak and out there in the right area to try and find a big redfish or big black drum. I know Haywood over there has got those big black drum dialed in, it seems. And, you know, there's a bunch of us down here that would love to take you fishing, man. That's not an issue. If you ever make the time and make it down here. But so what else is going on with you guys? Do you guys have any new promotions going on? Or did you guys go to iCast or any of those big shows to try and help promote the line? Or is that still kind of going to be the next few years?
We ourselves as a company did not go to iCast, but we did have people there who were who are working with us. Cast Gear is a company that we work with, and they were down there. And there's a couple of boat companies that we work with that were there helping us out also.
That's cool. And I see that you guys also offer leaders, pre-tied leaders, and that kind of thing too. So that's really cool. I'm all about trying to save a couple bucks, you know, and obviously fly fishing is one of those sports that has gotten to be or can be a little bit ridiculous when it comes to the cost of even just getting into it. And I know a lot of my listeners are a little sometimes hesitant to get involved with it just because of the initial startup cost of buying a reel, buying a rod, then having to put the line on it. The line almost hurts you as bad as buying a reel sometimes. And so it is nice.
It's ridiculous.
It is. And it is nice to see that you guys are offering lines from $54.99, which seems to be about the lower end of a good quality line that you can find. So I've got a box of Sage Equator Taper sitting in front of me that I have spooled on one of my reels that I'm sure it cost me somewhere near $90 to $100. So that's good. That's awesome. You guys are filling a niche that has been needed to be filled for a while. So how is Facebook? Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
How has Facebook worked for you as far as trying to get the word out? Has it been pretty good as far as getting kind of like the networking thing going for you?
Facebook has been 90% of everything that we do. It kicked off to the point that, you know, I was looking for things to do just before March. I mean, always busy, but, kind of bored getting things to go and rolling. And then Facebook hit, and it's just been nonstop. I just cannot keep up. We've got 10 people that work for us now, and we're just all buried alive.
Again, man, that's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. Where are you guys based out of?
We are just outside of Boise, Idaho, in a little city called Nampa.
Oh, Idaho. Nice.
Idaho.
God's country. We've been a couple of us actually have been talking about trying to get together and doing some road trips and what we call boondoggles, and which are basically camping trips where a bunch of us kayak anglers get together and meet up in a certain location. Their guys are about to go do one over in Chucktown here shortly, South Carolina, I believe it is. And boondoggle in the chat room there. But so, yeah, I know that I personally love to catch freshwater trout. So, listen, buddy, don't feel bad for you catching 10- and 12-inch fish. I'll tell you a real quick funny story. We were in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and my wife and I were there on a vacation, family vacation. And everybody neglected to tell me that there's a stock trout stream that runs through the little town there. And that didn't go over very well. We ended up having to make a run to a local Walmart. And they didn't have any fly combos available, but I had to buy a little ultralight. And I caught a little rainbow trout, one of my first rainbow trout that I had ever caught, and it was maybe 6 or 8 inches. And the look on my face holding this little fish in the picture, I got a picture still, it is the funniest expression you'll ever see. I got the biggest grin on my face, much like the first time I caught a wahoo or the first time I've caught a big bull dolphin or something like that. And my wife is laughing at me because she's like, you troll bait bigger than that fish for big offshore species, and you're so excited about this stupid little fish. And I'm telling her, you just don't understand. It's like the most amazing thing in the world. But no, man, I totally get what you guys are all about, the trout fishermen, and being a fly tier now myself, looking at some of the flies you guys tie or some of the flies you guys even use on like little tiny hooks, that's an art all in amongst itself, man. So kudos to you for doing it. That's awesome. But yeah, cool. So if anybody wants to get a hold of you guys, what's the best way to do it besides the website? You got a toll-free number or a way they can call and get
some
information?
Sure. You can email me personally, and that would be jas@flytooth.net. Or the phone number is 800-652-5234.
And again, guys, that's flytooth.net is the website. So do me a favor, give those guys a shout. Take a look at their products. If it's something you think would work for you, please feel free to give those folks some business. A good American company, and there's not very many of them left, so we definitely need to try and support them. But Jason, you know, I appreciate you coming on, and you're welcome back anytime you want, man. I appreciate your time, and I know it's been kind of tough for us to get you you guys on, and I appreciate you being able to take the time out on your daughter's 4th birthday. So wish her a very happy birthday from all of us.
Thank you very much.
All right, buddy. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye.
Cool.
Nice.
That works. Yeah. Fly tooth fly line.
Looks like a pretty nice line too. And hey, don't sell. There's not just little 12-inch rainbow trout up in like Idaho. Henry's Fork is a pretty world-renowned trout hole up there, man. And they get a lot bigger than 12 inches. And the outdoorist Rebecca Garlock lives there, and she catches like 30-inch salmon up there, man. So drink on fly. It's awesome.
Wow. That is cool.
Idaho is it's a pretty nice area to fish in.
Very cool. Very cool. I got some other callers calling in, man. I got a whole bunch of them. Let's see. 321, who do I have on the line?
That's the winner.
The winner?
Oh, me?
Oh, it's D.
I must win.
The grand champion.
Yay!
Hold on, I'm getting it.
Love those kids. Love the kids.
Those kids are awesome. Man, that's... I'm not going to give it away. Has Joe even announced it yet or no?
I believe he has. And it's... I'm kind of here and there about the situation, but it's the first year, and this happens with a lot of the kayak tournaments out there. It's kind of a... First off, let me explain. The tournament is a boat, two-man boat tournament, and or you can do a kayak tournament. And I was hoping more people would show up, but not as many people do. But when the first annual kayak tournament shows up, or is created, I should say, a lot of people don't know a lot about it. So that's kind of the reason why I probably won is because, first off, I didn't have very much competition because the advertising wasn't as it should have been, but you live and learn. And so hopefully next year a lot of people will know about the tournament. So basically I won based on the fact that there weren't that many people that signed up. And then above and beyond, those people probably didn't understand what the rules actually were and didn't catch fish, so they didn't show up at the weigh-in. So I was the only one that showed up. I won by default because nobody showed up. Hello? So I got to take everybody's money in my pocket.
Nothing wrong with that. That's awesome.
No. Oh, I love winning by default. It's a good one.
That's good. That's good.
But what we're talking about is the Coastal Redfish Tour,
mm-hmm.
and you could find out about that on coastalredfishtour.com. and it's multiple tournaments in specific divisions and then based in regions. It's 100% payout, so you don't lose any money at all if you win all of them, obviously. But I won the money for this division or this tournament for this division for this time, which advances me then to the regional and state tournaments, qualifying me for all of my money back and or everybody else's money if they don't want to or if they can't win. Please participate. It'd be ridiculous to win it and not, you know, get a lot of money out of it.
Right.
So let's say there were five kayakers who paid $45 is what the entrance fee is, $45. $15 of that goes to the state championship, basically. It's on hold. And you win the money back based on how many kayakers are participating. So if you won first, so you, $30 is each person's actual payout times however many people fished that specific day, you would receive, if you were the winner, you would receive that money back.
Gotcha.
Okay. So I should probably make it times 10. So if it's $30 per person pay-in, 10 people fished, you were the first person to win. Obviously, it's $30 times 10, which is $300. That would have been your.
Hold on, I'm still ciphering.
Yeah, sorry. I'm not really good at this special kind of thing. The $15 for every one of those people then is put in a pot. So if you won first in this and first in that and first in that or second, third or whatever, you can win the state championship. Now, each one of those first, second, third has a number point system behind it. So if you're first, you get 1,000 points. If you're second, you get like 950. If you're third, you get 925, that kind of thing. The state championship is based on your accumulated point amount.
Gotcha.
And you get all that money back.
Is this spelled out in their rules anywhere? Or, I mean, if someone wants to...
It's all there on the rules. And if anybody has any questions on it, because it's like the only tournament I've ever seen, in my opinion, that I've run across that runs 100% payout like this. It's not a tournament that has donations or representations of, okay, you're going to win a kayak paddle, or you're going to win a Hobie,
right,
or you're going to win this,
or
you're
going
to
win
that. It's straight cash.
Right. And I like cash. Cash is good.
Cash is good.
Cool. Awesome. Well, congratulations.
Sorry.
No matter how you win.
Sorry.
No,
a lot of blah, blah, blah. But
No. Absolutely. And again, hey, you won. At the end of the day, it shows up as a W. That's all that matters.
Well, you can join in, anybody that's got the wants. There's in our area, and there's other regions posted on the website because there's a couple more months to go of this. There's four more tournaments to go. So check them out. Look at the dates. Look for the areas that you have and join in and win some money, man. It's pretty good.
Yeah, that's cool. Sounds like it was a good time anyways. At least you got out on the water. We spoke about your fishing report, and it was, it's tough. It's tough right now over here with the algae bloom in the river and everything. It's hard to find those fish. But, yeah. So check it out, guys. If you want to get involved with that tournament, it's www.coastalredfishtour.com. D?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes.
So check it out. I know you missed it, but Dee, I talked earlier for a brief second about a giant flounder that was caught in Port Canaveral, 17.2 pounds.
Oh,
so,
my God.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit about flounder fishing real quick. Because for whatever reason, whether it be the storms pushing by or just the constant rough surf that we've had over here on the east coast of Florida, we've got our flounder run, I guess, has begun quite early. Typically, we don't see those big fish until the end of November, beginning of December. But they're here now. So, speaking of big flounder, I don't want to keep them sitting there for too long. The landing crew's in the house.
Thanks, John.
Sorry, buddy.
little Animal House touch and go there, huh?
Yeah, yeah. it's what do you think about a 17.2-pound flounder, dude?
I wouldn't, you know what? That'd be something I'd hear from, like, up in, you know, the Northeast or even down here in Virginia. That's where we get the big flounder, a.k.a. fluke.
Right.
You know, I remember catching 10-pound flounder all the time when I was a kid, but which are massive. I mean, we're talking 20-some-odd inches and, you know, 4 inches thick, you know, big, big fish. 17-pound flounder, that's just unheard of for down there,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, man. We've got flounder that live offshore our coast that don't ever make it inshore that I know of, or at least they're never caught. And these fish, I mean, I know of a bunch of commercial divers that shoot these things on the bottom and have told tales of flounder that were bigger than, like, serving platters, just giant flounder. And as soon as, yeah, big doormats, bigger than a doormat or the size of a doormat. And so getting to the bottom and seeing them and then trying to shoot them is quite the feat. I guess they're pretty leery when they get that big. I imagine they would have to be.
Yeah.
But this gentleman wasn't fishing from a kayak. He was fishing from a ginu, and which was pretty interesting where he was fishing. But fishing with a live finger mullet, I believe. I'm pretty sure that's what the story was. And fishing around the North Jetty out of Port Canaveral there. And said he dropped the bait down the bottom, felt something eat it, came tight to it, it dragged him all over the place. He thought it was a big stingray until it popped up, and then he's running around like a chicken with his head cut off trying to find a net. The fish was 28 inches long and 17.2 pounds, weight on a scale in the port out at one of the marinas. Just an
what
absolute,
was the size? I'm sorry, I missed it.
It was 28 inches long.
Nice.
And, like I say, 17.2 pounds. He said that the thing was just, I mean, whatever. You know, what do you say about it? You know, they're when they get that big, they don't even look real. What's that?
I say yum.
Yeah, I say yum, too. He's become quite of a legend now around here over the past week or so that since he's caught that fish. But what it has done is it's kick-started the flock of people that head out to Port Canaveral to try and find the flounder this time of year. So I'm going to go into that real fast. We'll talk with you, Dee, a little bit about your flounder techniques. I know Rob just caught some flounder over in the West Coast, and I'll talk with you, Mark, about it as well. And Haywood, I'm sure you get into some flounder every now and again. We just kind of real quick go through the list of guys and see what your techniques and tactics are. Mine, real quick, I like to fish a real short leader, something usually shorter than about 2 foot, somewhere around the foot mark is perfect for me. I use a hook that matches the size of the bait that I'm using. I want a gap in a hook that's going to be wide enough to clear the body of that mullet or that shrimp or the pogie or, you know, whatever my live bait happens to be. If I'm using live fish, I tend to run it on a fish finder rig, just a slip sinker rig, with, I guess, the most I think I've ever used out there at the port has been maybe a half-ounce egg sinker, just to hold it in a little bit of current that you'll find out there by the jetties. I really like to use jig heads, white jig heads particularly. I don't have a favorite brand when it comes to jig heads for this. It really honestly doesn't matter to me. a good strong hook is the only thing that's important. But I use a jig head when I'm fishing with either like a little mud minnow or a strip of squid or a flounder belly or a big shrimp. If you can find big shrimp, and usually in the wintertime, it's not too hard to find them at your local tackle shop. But the big shrimp are kind of the answer for me too down here. And white, for whatever reason, I do like a white jig head. But and I typically look for those fish around drop-offs anywhere you're fishing. If you're fishing around a jetty, try and find an area that might have like a deeper edge to it, a bit of relief that would fall away from the jetty. Those fish like to kind of lay on the bottom with their noses up the embankment, waiting for minnows and such to kind of dive over the other side. So, real quick in a nutshell, that's my main flounder tactics. I don't really target them too often in the intercoastals. This year I got lucky and got into a bunch of them up in the lagoon. That's the first time I'd ever been able to do that, so... But let's go to Dee, since you're on my coast. What's your favorite way to try and target flounder in your area, Dee?
Oh, God. I have two completely different tactics because the area I fish is inclusive of the inlet itself and then the regular grass flats areas. In the inlet itself, let's say you were not in a kayak, but I mean, you could be, but I just don't chance it. Just off the rocks, off of the bridges, off the jetty, whatever, I would use a fish finder like you were talking about, weighted at like 1 ounce to 1.5 ounce. You can go more depending on what the tide is doing, incoming or outgoing. You would probably have a number two shank hook tied to a 15 to 20 pound leader. It doesn't matter if you're using a braid line connected to that or mono. I prefer braid because I can feel the actual hit of the flounder when it sucks down your bait. But the number two shank hook, and then you would actually take the finger mullet and hook it through the nose in terms of from the bottom of the jaw of the finger mullet to the eye socket or in the middle of the head of the finger mullet. And then you would just kind of bump it down along the bottom and get your flounder that way. Our flounder in the inlet by the Sebastian Inlet doesn't really come in. The big ones, like 25-inch to whatever this guy caught. Some people have caught bigger. It doesn't really happen until our very first cold front is coming through. So the second that you know, or the day you know that it's really cold and you have to put your jacket on, if there's some people out there like that, it's time to go to the inlet and catch those flounder. That's our flounder coming through and then doing their spawning. That usually runs from October, middle of October, I guess, until December, somewhere around there. I don't think it's a little later than that. But the standard everyday type of fishing for flounder, I use a standard weedless jig head, like from Edgy Joe, weedless jig heads in different weights, and I bounce off a like gold flecked shad, which is about you could do a 3-inch to 4-inch shad, something in a shrimp color, and you bounce them off of you can go from the sandy shoreline all the way to drop-offs and whatnot, but the key is to always find a location that has some sort of tidal flow or wind flow and has a lot of bait flowing back and forth all the time. Otherwise, there's no reason to even try.
Very good.
Is that easy enough? I'm sorry.
Yeah. No.
It's a lot of information because it's two types.
It is. And I'll tell you what, I prefer to fish down your way. It's just that drive that usually wants to kill me for flounder. And I spent a lot of...
And mine did go up by you.
I hear you. I spent a lot of time growing up fishing the inlet down there for flounder. And I don't know if he's still around, but there used to be an old guy. They used to call him the Flounder King, and he used to hang out on the rocks down there, usually on the south side of the inlet, And that guy was the man. If you saw him at the inlet, then you knew the flounder around. But let's run over to Haywood. Tell me a flounder story. How do you catch him, brother?
Flounder?
He's like, what? Bycatch?
Well, yeah, they really are for us. I mean, I don't really target them, but our best time is usually in the winter time, and you'll get a lot of the small ones. To get the bigger flounder in the bay, you really have to have a boat. You can catch some. You might catch one or two in certain areas of the bay. I know there's guys that like to fish along seawalls for them. But usually there's something I catch in the winter targeting redfish holed up in potholes on the flats. And you'll catch a lot of, you know, just legal size flounder that way. And all I use in the wintertime is a chartreuse jig head, maybe a 1/8 ounce, with a DOA golden brim shad tail. And that's all I use all winter long. And just drag it across the bottom or slowly bounce it and let them hit it and let them chew it, because they grab their food first and then they have to chew it a little bit. So if you're getting strikes that you think are short strikes, throw it back in that same pothole and just drag it along real slow. You get that bite again, let them have it. You let them eat it and then set the hook, and usually it's almost always a flounder.
That's a good tip, man. My grandpa, actually my brother's in the chat room there, and he used to do some fishing with us when we were little kids, drift fishing up in New York, up in the Great South Bay. And my grandpa would always tell me that if you felt the flounder eat, you should give it some time, if not just even say your ABCs. And by the time you got done saying that, they usually have it sucked down, and you can go ahead and rip their face off. But I shouldn't say that. It's a family show. You can set the hook very, very solid.
Briskly.
Briskly, right. Rob, I saw you caught some flounder the other day, buddy. How'd you do it, and is it something that you would normally target?
Not always. I was kind of surprised where I was. It was in, you know, a mangrove area in the bay, and a lot of really weird. It's, you know, kind of ins and outs along these like little mangrove shorelines, and we were targeting the creeks, like little mangrove creeks that were kind of coming out through. And you know what I would do? I was just using a 1/16 ounce jig head on a fallen tide at those creek mouths with a white DOA glow colored curly tail. And I would just chuck that up into the creek a little ways and kind of swim it out, and caught two nice flounder that way yesterday. You know, I don't know if that was what was biting my tails off or not, but I had probably about a half a dozen curly tails get the tails bit off of them. What I was catching, I caught about 10 mangrove snapper too, so on the same thing. So I don't know if that was what was chewing the tails off or not. But, usually around here, I'll use if I'm flounder fishing, usually in the fall and in the spring, around Sand Key Inlet, that area, Dunedin, around Hurricane Pass. I'll use it's deeper water. I'll use a half inch or a half ounce DOA measles-colored shrimp, and just the half ounce, so it'll get down faster, and usually just work the bottom a little bit, and usually flounder, if they're around, they'll eat that kind of stuff.
Nice. Lots of good tips. Mark?
Yes, sir.
Tell me a flounder story, buddy. What's the biggest flounder you've ever caught up there, Virginia Beach?
In Virginia Beach, that would have been my 24-inch one last year. That one weighed in, I think it was right around 7-8 pounds.
Nice.
But I use several different rigs. My two main ones are a live bait rig, which is is different than what everyone else uses, basically. And that is like a drop shot rig almost, or drop rig. You see, you know, catching, you know, spot and croaker. But it's a, you know, 40-pound mono with a dropper loop with a 18-inch tag end to a number one, or, yeah, just a regular size one treble hook. And then, you know, that goes down into my weight for the tag end. And then I take a live bait, a snapper, a small spot, a croaker, the neighbor's dog. It doesn't really matter. And everyone else rips all their stuff through the nose. Don't do that. Flounder don't grab by the tail. They suck in their bait, and when they do it, look at the bait's head and its tail, they collapse on each other. If you watch any videos, you see that bait coming sideways. And what I do is I hook it right through the middle of the back, and I drop it down. And because it's sitting up, you know, a good, you know, 18 inches from the bottom, that flounder's got to rise up, suck it in. And when he does, he goes back to the bottom. As soon as he does that, he's hooked. No real hook set needed. Just start cranking when you feel the weight. That's if I have live bait and I have, like, little to no current. If I have a lot of current, like here at the Baybridge Tunnel, if I'm up north in Montauk, I use a double bucktail rig. And basically what that entails is a white with a blue back, two to three ounce bucktail with bluefish belly, flounder belly, a whole squid tied on the bottom. Go up about another 18 inches to 2 feet. Another drop a loop to about a 1/8 ounce chartreuse and white bucktail. And then just a small strip of bluefish, flounder belly, a live gudgeon or a dead gudgeon or mud minnow or killie, however you want to call it. And then that bait, the bottom bait, the live bait rig, you don't move it. You just let it do its thing as you just slightly drift around. With that double bucktail rig, because you're moving in the current really quickly, you've got to really work it up and down to keep it straight up, you know, vertical with your kayak. And when you do that movement and that bait coming up and smacking the bottom and making that poof really drives the flounder insane. And what I've found is that eight times out of ten, I'll say, they'll bite the top bait. Flounder are very aggressive, especially up here. And they see another bait chasing your big bait chasing a smaller bait, they're going to eat that smaller bait. They're not going to eat the small one, or the big one, excuse me. And it really is an effective, quick current technique. I use it all the time. I've always got one tied up in my tackle box just for that occasion.
Oh, that's cool. That's a totally different tactic than what we use down here, but I can see how it would be effective as well. Actually, what's funny is when we moved down here from New York when I was little, we had tackle boxes that we had brought down here with us, and in those tackle boxes were rigs that we had from New York, fluke rigs, you know, with bucktail tied on them with kale hook and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
With spinners on them and all kinds of craziness, and three-way swivels for bank sinkers and just, you know, crazy stuff that nobody would use down here. And I've actually used some of those things. Now looking back, wishing that I hadn't, I'd have just kept them for sentimental reasons. But I've actually used some of those things down around D's neck of the woods in that current. And I'll tell you what, that's something that you might think about, D, is adding a little spinner to your rig whenever you're sitting there in current. Just let that little flash just keep flashing, flashing, flashing. It'll draw that fish's attention. That's a pretty cool tip for sure. Greg Becker.
Where? I know him.
How are you, sir?
Doing very well, thank you.
Awesome. Do you have a flounder story you'd like to share and some super secret tips that you use? Or?
Well, in my many, many, many months of fishing in Florida in salt water for flounder. I only have one time that I've ever targeted flounder. I was fishing a tournament last year that earlier this spring, rather, that weren't many snook in the area. So your option was to substitute a flounder for the snook for a for what they referred to as a Jacksonville slam. And started off with a trout and finished another redfish in the afternoon, or as the day went on. And your friend and mine, Haywood, had picked up a very, very nice 29-inch redfish that I took several pictures of for him. And I didn't think I was going to top that to be able to get in the get on the leaderboard with the redfish. So I figured I'd go out to where this weed bed broke off into some deeper sandy water and look for a flounder just to round out some kind of slam. First cast dragged the gold fluke, the Exude gold dart, very slowly across right on the edge of the border between the grass and the sand. About 10 seconds into the very slow reel drag, came tight, landed a 17-inch flounder, and wound up taking second place in the tournament because of the slam, the faux slam, as I refer to it. So that was the only time I've targeted them. I've caught them a couple other times. Same technique. The first one was absolutely unintentional. I wasn't paying attention to what I was doing. It was the first time I was out in the kayak, and I had let the bait sit for a second while I was adjusting something in the boat. Same thing, came tight. And but it's always been the same technique, slow rolling that fluke right along a grass edge or a sand grass edge.
Very cool. Well, you know, you're new to it down here, man. There'll be plenty of opportunities to get on them flounders, man. And whenever you get a shot, if you do in the wintertime, make a trip over here to the East Coast. It's flounder fishing over here tends to be, I think, a little bit better for larger fish than, as Haywood was saying, you got to run out a little bit further to get some larger fish. You guys have a lot of those Gulf flounder, the three-spot flounder on your coast. So, cool. Appreciate everyone's knowledge. Chip, have you spent some time targeting flounder in your many journeys, sir?
I know that guy Becker too, man.
Got to watch out for that guy. He's shifty.
Yeah. I just put a link. I put a link in the chat room, and I put it on your little episode info there. Also, it's from a fishing catalog online. It's called a Redfish Flounder Rig, and they had pretty good success with it. Not only using live bait, but also with soft plastics, and it's a ready-made leader that has an egg sinker on it that goes closest to your line, to the tag end of your line, and then it has a small slip bobber on a little cork, and then you hook your soft plastic on the other end, which you adjust that the closer that you have the weight to the closer you push the bobber to the sinker, the lower the bait is in the water. Closer the bobber is to your bait, it'll be higher, but you drag the little egg sinker along the bottom. And they had real good success with that in Savannah. It's a really kind of a neat rig. They call it a flounder rig, a redfish flounder rig, but it bounces along the bottom and it keeps that. Is my issue with it is I don't let the bait sink long enough. I get impatient. And I don't bounce it along the bottom, so I don't keep it in the strike zone long enough. So I'm not the best flounder fisherman in the world. But I've seen other guys do it with that, get away with it.
And, you know, I find that to be the absolute key. Everybody has said that when it comes to the soft plastics and whatnot, not fishing the inlet. But to keep your bait on the bottom, that's the key, and you have to have patience. And if you're bumping it along the bottom, you have to literally feel the bump and let it hit, wait a second or whatever, at least feel that it hit the bottom, and then bump it again, and don't do some heavy pulls on that to make it pop up and go back down. Just some slight twitches on that. Keeping the bait on the bottom is key, regardless, because that's where they sit, you know, and that's what they're looking for. They're looking for easy prey.
Yep.
Very good.
And I found I had a lot better luck with braided line because it has a better feel to it.
Yeah.
So But I'm still not real good. I'm in awe of folks like Dee and Chuck who catch flounder.
Yeah, I like the braided lines. Obviously, growing up, I never had it to use, but now that it's readily available and it seems to be spooled on everything that I own, I've come to love it for flounder fishing because it's definitely a feel thing. You know, if you feel a slight tap when your bait hits the bottom, after it hits the bottom, you feel that little thump. You almost have to kind of like tell yourself, don't move it. You know, don't lift your rod tip. Just let it lay there for a second. And then like, I think it was Mark was saying it. You'll feel them kind of bite, and because they kind of suck their bait in sideways. Or it might have been Haywood. And you just got to give them the time to get that bait good and down, you know. And a lot of times I wait so long that when I do set the hook, they've either swallowed it or it comes out like right near their eyeballs and stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't mind waiting. It's one of those fish that, you know what, if I gut hook it, chances are because of the size of the bait that I'm using, he's going to be a keeper, and they don't go back when they're keepers for me. They taste too good. But, yeah.
I mean, so, as far as the biology of the fish, they have a relatively small mouth for the size fish that they are.
Yeah, they do. I mean, honestly, I mean, I've caught some pretty big ones. My biggest one, I think down here, is probably pushing 9 pounds, 10 pounds. I've never weighed any of my big flounder. I could just kind of, you know, guesstimate. But so, you know, you grab a pair of pliers and, you know, pop their mouth open just to look at it because it's kind of a strange looking creature. And it will surprise you, unlike a triple tail where their mouths tend to be so much bigger for such a small fish, you know. But well, it's getting kind of late in the show. I'm going to go ahead and skip Spanish mackerel this week. Sorry for anybody that wanted to hear about Spanish mackerel fishing. We'll talk about that next week. I really want to get to ditch fishing. And with that... Yeah, all right, whatever.
Yeehaw!
Yeah, right? Whether you want to call it canal fishing or retention pond fishing, or ditch fishing, as I like to call it, it can be really exciting, and it can be done from a kayak, depending upon the size of the ditch. I found a spot here in Brevard County that right now, as we speak, is holding juvenile tarpon. The tarpon are anywhere from literally 6 inches in length, which I actually watched a guy catch on fly one time, the craziest thing you've ever seen, up to 15, 20 pounds or so. Every now and again, a bigger one will move through, but just about 15, 20 pounds is about the biggest that you normally will see them. This past week, I caught my very first tarpon on a fly that I tied. Not my first tarpon on fly, my first tarpon on a fly that I tied myself. So I was pretty proud of that. In doing so, I made friends with a gentleman who does tarpon tagging research, or DNA research, if you will, where they take what looks like basically a sponge, and you scrape the outside edge of the tarpon's jaw and get some just skin cells and stuff on that sponge. You drop it in a little vial with some, I believe it's alcohol in there, peroxide or something. I'm not real sure what it is, but you can get these kits at some of your tackle shops. Should have them. If not, I think it's tarpon tagging research or tarpon DNA research. You can just Google it. In fact, I'll try and do that for you here. But Nick, if you get a chance, do that for me, buddy, and post up the link in the chat room there. So these tarpon will move in typically right this time of year, late summer, early fall, and they'll stay all the way through the wintertime. It's kind of interesting because if you look at the body of water that I'm finding these fish in, you really kind of have to think about everything you've ever heard about tarpon, about the fact that they go offshore to spawn. And, you know, they do their deal out there. If that's the case, that's one heck of a journey for a 6-inch fish to make to get all the way into a little tiny ditch. So kind of interesting. Those fish will readily take small finger mullet, mud minnows, shrimp, that kind of thing. Flies, obviously. Topwater plugs on occasion will work. the small muridines from Miralure work well for them. What else? I don't know, man. I've known guys that have caught them on just all kinds of crazy stuff. But so yeah, that's it was pretty neat, man. So this gentleman that I met, he last year had caught, I believe, 190 something of them on fly. Ditch tarpon and also just tarpon off of boats and that kind of thing, which is a lot of tarpon to catch in one year. That is his only target species, so he really enjoys doing that. But anyways, he told me about the spot where I ended up catching my fish, and we kind of met up at the same place. It was pretty warm this day. Actually, Adam from YakAngler.com and his brother-in-law were down, and they were fishing with me. We're just going to ahead and skip over Adam's performance. He's my buddy and all, man. And I don't know, that kid's just cursed. I don't know what's going on with him, but anyhow, that's for a different show. I'm going to need 2 hours just to talk about that. But, so that's horrible.
Sorry.
So,
I know.
So anyway, so, the guy was sitting here showing me kind of some techniques that he uses to find these fish and some of the flies that he uses, and they look just like a sabiki rig. He uses really small little hand-tied flies, and Rob, you might find this interesting. He ties several of them in a line, much like a sabiki rig, and he fishes these ditches with these little tiny flies to get the little tiny small 6 to like 15-inch tarpon to eat them. So it's kind of cool. Wow, did Adam's performance come up short? Yeah, good one. So
I have a question. If you're casting these rigs like a sabiki version, are you putting a weight on them like you do like you're offshore fishing and trying to get your bait?
Nope, it's just like you would on a normal fly. He just ties it in line with his heavy leader. And I don't know how it works, D, but somehow or another, it rolls out just fine, just like a normal fly would. And he jumped a few tarpon that were about the size of the one that I caught, 19 inches, and a few that were a little bit larger than that on that same rig. The hooks are just obviously way too small to try and set on any kind of a decent-sized tarpon. But, yeah, it was kind of interesting. I tell you this story to tell you the next story, which is, about five or 10 minutes after I caught my fish, Adam's brother-in-law caught a tarpon. So,
yay!
Yeah. On a soft plastic, mind you, a paddle tail, rigged weedless. The guy has been fishing for 3 months, and already he's caught a 6-pound largemouth bass in Kentucky and a tarpon. So, kudos to him. Obviously, it was a little tough for Adam, I think, to deal with the fact that his brother-in-law caught a tarpon in front of him. But it was what it was. Well, a few minutes after that, this gentleman that had been fishing alongside of us started to look a little sweaty, and he was like, "Oh, you guys can have it. I'm going home. I'm tired." So he goes and gets in his car and turns on his air conditioning, and I notice he's sitting there for an awful long time, and I can't figure out for the life of me, you know, why would you just sit there? Why don't you just drive on home, right? So I'm just about to walk up to his car and check on him, and he starts laying on his horn, and I walk over to him, and he's in a bad way. It appeared to me that he was having the early symptoms of a heat stroke. I have law enforcement background. I had to go through medical training and all that kind of thing. So, you know, I was trained to notice what those symptoms were. And plus, just from playing sports and things like that, you kind of learn. But so I asked him, I was like, "Man, are you okay?" And he's like, "No, I'm not good." And with a real, real soft voice, he kind of asked if one of us would drive him to his house. And that wasn't an option. That wasn't going to happen. So I dialed 911, had them come out. In the meantime, this guy's got like probably $2,000 or $3,000 worth of fly gear in his car. I wasn't about to leave his car sitting there on the side of a dirt road next to a ditch, right? So I got his car key from him. I Googled his address onto my phone and found his house. I described his house from the aerial satellite view. Thank you very much, Google Earth. And he confirmed that that was indeed his home. So I drove his car to his house after he was transported off to the hospital. I don't know what his status is. Even up till now, I haven't heard from him. I don't know. I know a few people that know him. But you know, it's kind of weighing heavily on my mind, wondering how this guy is. You know, being a fellow fisherman, it just, you know, it all happening right in front of you, it kind of freaks you out a little bit. So, with that being said, even though we're coming into the fall, if you will, we don't really have a fall in Florida, but let's just call it fall. You still have to stay hydrated. You still have to be wise about how much time you spend outside in the sun and what you're wearing and that kind of thing. So be careful out there. It's easy for that kind of thing to creep up on you. I'm the worst about wearing too much clothes when it's hot outside. I usually wear a pair of pants or at least a pair of shorts. I wear a cotton long sleeve shirt, a buff, a hat, and all this other stuff. And I'm usually looking like I'm ready to go out on a winter ski trip or something like that by the time I leave the house. But it's bad. It's just bad news. You know, it can happen to any one of us. So just keep that in mind. But getting back to the tarpon. Okay. Anywhere you live in Florida, any body of water, or in the South for the most part, there's fish in just about everything that you see. The little tiny retention ponds that go along the interstate that you'll see off the exit ramps and entrance ramps, full of bass. If you go further in South Florida, they got peacock bass in them. Some of those have tarpon in them. So there's no body of water that's too small that you know, you can't fish or whatever and find something in. What I would do is drive, especially with the rains that we've been having here in Florida, get out if you know of an area where there's some culvert pipes or just some good runoff areas. If you don't have a culvert, maybe there's just a bridge somewhere where when it rains, the water kind of flows past it. And just kind of spend some time watching those areas and see what you see. A lot of times the tarpon will roll. Sometimes they don't roll. They'll just be kind of moving through, and you'll notice bait fish will get nervous. They'll shoot to the surface and kind of cruise around, like just to get out of the way or whatever. Those are all good spots to fish for these tarpon, these ditch tarpon. And also, there's like garfish that are available. I mean, no, it's not a prestigious fish to catch, but you know, they're still fun. Anything with teeth and the ability to hit a topwater plug to me is fun. So. You know, the garfish, I'll take them whenever I can get them as well. But I typically run small baits for those tarpon. There's some areas up in the north end of the Indian River, like Patilla Creek. The ditches that run alongside Biolab out towards Mosquito Lagoon. Back up in the Boy Scout camp, for any of those of you who may be listening that know what I'm talking about, those are all good places. Down by D, the Sebastian River is a good spot to find those little tarpon. Turkey Creek, Melbourne, I think it's called Melbourne River or something like that. There's an area off of Sarno Road down in Melbourne that's got a little dam down there. And you can go down there and find those little tarpon in the wintertime as well. So there's a lot of kind of cool, that's a little kind of like a extracurricular activity, if you will, something different that you can go and do. And you never know where these creeks will lead you to. The one that I was fishing actually leads you back into a big open estuary area that's cut off from any other mainland. So motorboats can't get back in there. I've fished it from the other side and done real well in the wintertime because the bottom tends to be real soft and holds a lot of warmth, which is something else you guys should be looking for as we come into the fall, into the early parts of winter. It is September, so we're not too far off to be talking about it. You know, it's things that we should all be thinking about, tactics of things that are upcoming. So, but yeah, ditch fishing, it's awesome. It's not just for banjo playing, no tooth having, tobacco in your lip, chewing, whatever. It's or cane polars. You know, that's fine. Any of you guys ever do any ditch fishing or catch any kind of interesting fish out of ditches or canals or anything like that? Rob?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. I'll tell you, you know, it's funny. The neighbor kid, when I lived in St. Pete, the neighbor kid saw me coming in from fishing, and he goes, "Hi, you been fishing?" And I said, "Yeah." And He says, there's snook down in the creek. And there's like this little... That's right. That's what I said,
That'd
too.
Be snook.
So,
snooks.
That's
snook.
Right. There's a snook down
the
there.
Snook.
So anyway, and I'm thinking, you know, there's like this residential drainage canal that runs through the neighborhood, you know. And I'm thinking, you know, it's a ditch. It's maybe 5-6 feet across, maybe, and maybe ankle deep water in it, right? It's got some, you know, deeper spots in it, but really, it's a stormwater drain, really. And, you know, where this thing, so I looked it up on Google Earth, you know, and it's a whole network of storm drain, you know, canals that run through there and, you know, dump right into the bay there. So I'm thinking, wow, that's cool. And I said, listen, here's my phone number. Next time you're down there, you know, at the creek, give me a call if you see some snook down there. So sure enough, man, like the next day he calls me. Hey, hi, I'm down there and there's some fish down here. Okay. So I walk down there. You know, it's like a block away. Sure enough, there's like a 22-inch snook there. Yeah. That's what I said. Sure enough, there's a 22-inch snook laying up under the that's what it sounds like on the cell phone, too. Laying up under these little mangroves hanging in this this stormwater drain. And I was like, really? So, you know, some more Bing Map research revealed that this thing really opened up, you know. So I said, okay, well, how about this? Saturday, you know, we got a good tide for it and everything. And off of 54th Avenue there, it widens to about, I don't know, maybe 200 feet at the widest. And we were down there, and, you know, it's like maybe a foot deep. And sure enough, man, there is snook all over this thing, and big ones, too, like in the 30 to 40-inch range, just cruising around. They were spooky as all get out, but you could just see little shadows lurking around and stuff. You know, it's great. So ditch fishing is awesome, man. I don't have – in fact, some of the best bass I've ever caught were out of either retention ponds or – golf course pond or something like that, you know, because 9 times out of 10 they get really big, and chances are they probably haven't seen, you know, a lure before. So don't you know, discount the ditch fishing, man. I'm all about it.
No, I am too. In fact, I'm about to make everybody who's listening to the show extremely jealous, and I'm sorry. But I have to gloat about this. I have been invited to go out and fish on Kennedy Space Center property, which for any of you that don't know what that means, basically that means I get to fish in areas where fish have never even seen a lure before. We've got residential redfish stocks that are, you know, everything from rats and slot-sized fish all the way up to 50 inchers that can be caught in the middle of the daytime on a topwater plug sitting next to a culvert, and they'll literally fight over your topwater baits. Every year the Space Center has a family get-together. They call it a family tournament, kids tournament, and employees are allowed to invite a guest out and let you fish off the dike road. So the only thing is that you're not allowed to use live bait, which, big deal. You know, I'm not much of a live bait thrower anyways. But, so you basically drive up and down these dike roads, and every culvert you pull up to will be absolutely slapped, packed with just giant redfish, tarpon, snook, black drum, just everything you can imagine. And if you can picture going to a spot where these fish had never seen a lure before and being able to fish those areas. And basically they're just that, they're ditches, they're mosquito control kind of marsh impoundments. And, you know, it's if you guys are familiar with the no motor zone, if you were allowed to go past the bridges and go on up towards the Space Center, that's the area that I'm talking about. So it'll be really, really cool. I expect to take a lot of video, a lot of, photos and stuff. Yeah, look out for gators. There's giant gators up there. So yeah, it'll be fun. But that's ditch fishing at its finest.
You're gonna get it.
Say what?
You're gonna get it.
Yeah. I'm gonna get taken out by a 12-foot gator just for talking smack.
That's right, old Charlie's gonna get you, man.
I got that bastard's eye. But it's all right. So yeah, there you go. Ditch fishing. I'm not going to really hound on that one too much. Tim Creasy, since this is kind of like a fly fishing-ish kind of a show, Tim Creasy is a gentleman who targets carp on fly. And I want to just give a real quick shout-out to him. I appreciate his generosity, and I'm going to pass it along to others. Tim Creasy had made mention on his Facebook page about Gander Mountain, having a sale on fly tying hooks for tarpon hooks. And I think the funny thing about it was, I believe he was in, I think he lives in Kentucky. So kind of a weird place for Gander Mountain to put fly tying hooks for tarpon, but whatever, probably why they were on sale. So he was kind enough.
I got to cut you off there a little bit. Gander Mountain is up in northern Michigan, up into almost Canada, and they're going to do fly tying and whatnot just for their brook trout and whatever they got going up over there for their streams. So kudos to them for keeping up with everything, seriously.
Yeah, for sure. No, I'm not knocking
them
at all.
That's where I used to buy all my stuff when I was doing my freshwater fishing.
Yeah, it's they're definitely one of the leading authorities now when it comes to big box stores. But So Tim was so kind to put out the option that if you wanted to get on some of these packs of hooks, stainless steel Mustad tarpon hooks, at a ridiculous price, you know, let him know what you want and he'll take care of you. Well, I was joking, half kind of serious. I said, I'll take two packs of each. I think there's size ones and size 1.0s or size ones and 2.0s or something like that. And he sent me three packs of each. And when I asked him, you know, where should I send the money to? He was like, just pass it along to others, man. Just, you know, you take care of other people. So I was like, cool, man. I appreciate it. So with that being said, if you would like a fly tied by yours truly, drop me a message on my Facebook page if you are a friend, and I will tie you something that resembles something hopefully a fish will eat on one of these flies that were given to me so generously. So, yeah, appreciate it.
Oh, my God. I have one of your flies, Chuck, that I don't even use, one of those black, purple, glowy ones.
Yeah.
It is so – I don't even throw it. It's so pretty and so delectable looking. It sits on my shelf with, ironically, my fiancé's grandfather's fly rods are hanging over our deer antlers and stuff. The racks are used to hold all those rods, and it's hanging up there as a trophy fly. It is so cool. Just get it for that, even if you don't want to throw it. Beautiful. Beautiful. Love it.
Greg Becker. I know I owe you flies, buddy. I
wasn't going to say it out loud. I'm just saying.
Wow. No, I know. I know I owe you flies, but I got a whole pile of stuff coming to you. Don't worry about it.
Just don't be in a hurry for them.
Whoa. That's it.
I'll pick them up when I get over there. No problem.
All right, cool. There you go. I've been waiting for 6 months to take you fishing. I've been waiting 6 months to take you fishing, so there you go.
It's been a month, dude. You're killing
me. I know. But no, seriously, drop me a... Go ahead.
You can't tie flies when it ain't shedding season for your dog.
Wow. I don't even have a dog, so... You know,
dead raccoon.
No, I just have areas of my carpet in my house that are bald now that I've trimmed carpet fibers. No, just kidding. But seriously, send me a little
carpet.
Yeah,
you put carpet. It down over the dirt.
Yeah, that's right. So, but seriously, wow, out of control. Send me a message on my Facebook page. If you're not my friend, tough. No, I'm kidding. Friend request me. And, I'll give send me let me know that you heard about this on the show and give me your address and I'll send you out a fly. Oh wow, crazy! Every week it gets more nutty and nutty around the Monday Night Kickoff show. I like it, but yeah. So there you go.
stress of Monday, the first day of the week. Everybody's wiped out, man. They have to come on here and get goofy.
Well, hang on a second. Real quick update. New York Giants 7, St. Louis Rams 3. With 2 minutes with 2 minutes and 53 seconds left in the first quarter. So it's still early, D. Don't worry. Okay, well, on to the next thing. Orlando Kayak Fishing Club. For those of you that listen to the show and are looking and might be new to kayak fishing and live in Central Florida, doesn't matter if you're over here on the East Coast or if you're down by D or over by Rob, the Orlando Kayak Fishing Club does not discriminate about where you live. You can come and join. It's free. It's a bunch of really good people that are involved with it. They have their next meeting is Tuesday, October the 4th at Mosquito Creek Outdoors, which is a really, really cool place to go and just check out if nothing else. They're like one of the mainstays for kayak sales and all things kayak related over there in the Orlando area. So their topic of the night will be how to keep your reels maintained and healthy. And I believe they've got a guy from this gentleman, Steve Hartman, I believe, from Steve's Reel Repair, who has been doing reel repair for a number of years. He's going to be putting on a little how to take care of your reels seminar. So check that out, if you will. Also, too, don't forget yakangler.com is your ultimate kayak fishing resource for all things kayak fishing. Check that those guys out. Mark and Adam are great people. They put together a really good website for us, and it's all out of their pocket, man. They're not looking to they may be looking to get rich and famous off it one day, but it's a great resource for sure. If nothing else, browse some of the pictures and some of the reports and stuff. Many of the kayak fishing radio hosts do some writing for that website, so it's a good tool to use to learn about all things kayak fishing. Anybody fishing this upcoming week?
Yes.
Greg Becker, what are you fishing for this upcoming week, or where are you going, bud?
Oh, actually, it looks like Haywood, myself, and another buddy will be taking our kids out, V.G. Simmons Park, into Tampa Bay and taking them out in the kayaks and seeing what we can hook up on.
By the way, your comment on my Facebook page hurts.
It wasn't supposed to hurt. It was just supposed to sting a little bit.
Good.
Spare the rod and spoil the child.
Ain't it the truth, though?
Yeah, that's cool. Hey, listen, man, he's not going to be the only photographer in a group anymore, man. I've got my wife has been so kind to have ordered me a brand new Canon Rebel T3 with two lenses, a bag, and all the fun stuff. So, I'm going to get out there and get after it, too. So there you go. Rob, are you going to do any fishing this week or this weekend?
Yeah. Looking like same old, different spot. And water cool down water is cooled down a little bit in the area, so we're going to get out early and see if we can have better luck this week and chasing some redfish and things like that. Hasn't been so rainy, so hopefully we'll be doing some good stuff.
There you go. Anytime you're on the water, man, again, it's always a good time. And now that you got your GoPro and I saw your first video that you put out, man, it was good. I mean, the editing was pretty good, man, for your first shot. Pretty impressed.
Well, it was kind of dark. I mean, it was just basically a trial run. And, it is what it is. I got like 2 hours of footage yesterday, and it was all dark, man, you know, because the sun was behind the mangroves, and it was like totally took out all of the, all of the foreground. So you can't see the rod against the mangroves or anything like that. So it was definitely not a, but I did get a funny shot of me, you know, I'm catching a flounder and I'm pulling it in. Like right when I pull him in the kayak, he comes unbuttoned, you know, and it's like flopping around between my legs, you know. And on my kayak, you know, I got the big round center hatch right in front of the seat. So he's there, and he's like the business end is pointing at me, you know, and I'm like, hey, you know, you don't want to go there. And anyway, ended up in my footwell, you know, he just wasn't done yet, you know. So that was pretty funny. He pretty much took up my footwell. So it was just pretty funny to see it. But I don't think it'll ever see the light of day because it was just too dark.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll just take that section and edit it up and throw it out there.
Yeah. Hey, why not? It all makes for good video, dude. It all makes for good video. Chip.
What, bro?
Are you fishing this week, buddy? Listen, you have to have at least like 12 inches of dust on them kayaks, bud.
I got to get out there with a big stick. There's a big old black widow in one of them.
Not a family of raccoons living in one. You got a couple of possums in another. Homeless guy sleeping underneath one of them.
Hey, put that there's down. One squirrel got that cobra full of pecans.
Oh, you walk that out was the there, one dude. He was bringing for
I
me
thought
and
it
shuts
was,
down, man.
I thought it was Adam living in it, but it was just a little squirrel.
Wow, no. You almost made me choke my beverage, sir.
Wow.
So are you going to try and fish it all this week? Poor Adam, man.
Yeah. Yeah, the weather's just about right. So, you know, I got too many toys, so I think we're probably going to go and try to do something this weekend. There's a pond down the road that looks about right now, so yep. We'll probably get out there and go after some green fish. I think the crappie are starting to bite. So
specs.
Yeah, specs.
Yeah.
So
Scuba Stan just logged in. How's it going, buddy?
Yeah.
Cool. D, are you gonna do any fishing?
No.
Yeah. Right.
No,
he's like, I'm on the water right now. What are you talking
what?
About?
No tournament this weekend?
Gave it up.
There is a tournament this weekend, but Dee's not fishing it. However, she will be fishing with me, I hope.
I will fish side by side with my buddy Chuck, yes, but I will not actually be in the tournament.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That means I have a chance.
Chuck will win this one. And if he doesn't, I'm going to look really bad.
That's it. We're teaming up to put the whooping on people. No, it'll be fun. Like I said, you know the circumstances, so it would normally just be a fishing excursion for yourself and myself, so otherwise, but got to try and get some glory. Mr. Becker, what's going on, buddy? Are you done beating me up?
Is the show over?
No. Oh, wow. Yeah. Awesome. You still got time to beat me up. No problem.
You got 36 minutes left, man.
You do. You know, I'm just going to skip Mr. Becker. In fact, I might put Mr. Becker on hold real quick.
Hang on. I'll go grab a 5-hour energy.
Oh, man. Scoop Stan, yes, I am working at Handler's on Thursday, I believe. I'm pretty sure that I should be there. Thursday, yes. Wednesday, I'm off. So Thursday, I'll be there. Saturday, I'm off.
Give him some stickers while he's down there, man.
Oh, I got plenty of stickers. Listen, I've got stickers coming out of my ears. In fact, if anybody wants any Bloody Dex stickers, the company Bloody Dex out of California, I've got some of their stickers at the shop, a ton of them. So let me know. I'll send those out with the flies as well. You should expect to receive those sometime late 2012. So whatever, man. This way here, if you get them like next week, then you're all pumped, like woo, you know. But whatever, sounded good. No, the show's not over, Mr. Becker. You can pick on me all you want. I went to the Fly Fisherman, which is I guess it speaks for itself. It's my local fly shop in Titusville. I could almost throw a rock to it from my house. And I met a gentleman by the name of John B. Cave, who has written a book called Performance Fly Casting. And it's a good read. It's got some pretty good really good information in it. Very, very nice gentleman. He was doing a book signing there. And while I was there, I got to speak with Miss Renzetti, the owner of Renzetti Fly Tying Vices and Rod Lathes and Other Tools. For any of you fly tiers out there, rod builders out there, the Renzetti name is, you know, obviously speaks for itself as far as quality, craftsmanship. She wants to probably come on the show. Well, she's going to come on the show in the next couple of weeks. She is a huge advocate for casting for recovery. And as we know on the show and or on the other shows, we like to do whatever it is that we can to help out that group. So look for that to be coming up in the next few weeks. Early plug for them. Any of you folks that are fans of the Renzetti stuff, December, I believe it is the 2nd. I'll allow her to plug it a little bit more when she comes on. They're going to have an open house here in Titusville where you can come on out and check out all the goings-ons over at Renzetti. I may be doing a kayak fishing seminar there. We're waiting to finalize that kind of stuff. But, yeah, good stuff. Really good stuff. She's a really nice lady, and I felt honored to meet her. So there you go. Look forward to that. And I believe she's going to come on to all the other shows as well. I know she wants to kind of spread the word about Casting for Recovery and the things that she does. The open house, I believe she splits the profits that are made that day between the two companies that Casting for Recovery, and there's another foundation that she works with, but all the proceeds that are raised on that day will be split between the two. So yeah, it's awesome. Get involved with that. Casting for Recovery. You know, all of us can do something for that. You don't have to be a fly fishing expert. There's something that can be done from all of us. And, you know, those ladies have gone through enough in their lives. What they're trying to do for breast cancer survivors is pretty awesome. I think all of us, if not all of us, most of us have been affected by that horrible disease. So whatever we can do to help, we should do. You know what? I got 30 minutes left. Let's talk Spanish mackerel, if you guys don't mind, because I don't want to talk about that next week. I got other things I've got coming up. Spanish mackerel, my area. Fun fish to catch. Very exciting. Fast running, hard pulling, hard striking. Good eating, for those of you that don't know. They're actually delicious if you eat them fresh. Fillet them out and cut them right down the bloodline there. Cut the bloodline out and fry them or blacken them. Some people smoke them and make them into fish dip. So, you know, one of my favorite ways to catch Spanish mackerel is with a free line mullet. You guys are killing me. Yeah, there you go. Freeline finger mullet, 50-pound monofilament leader, a long shank mustad hook, something in like a 1.0 to even a 2.0, depending upon the size of the finger mullet, a long stretch of that 50 tied directly to my braid, either using a uni-uni or double uni or at Albright. Sometimes I'll throw a bimini twist in there to a uni-uni. That kind of helps to strengthen up that knot, especially if you're using the light braid to that heavy 50-pound leader. The knot doesn't tend to slip through whenever you doubled it up with a bimini. So those fish are found typically right off our coast, just out past the I'm not even watching. I can't even watch the chat room anymore. Right out past the breakers. Inside Port Canaveral, you can find them. Out and around the jetty, back up in towards the drawbridge. Every now and again, some will sneak into the Indian River up this way, but not very often. They'll take spoons, they'll take gotcha plugs or sea sharks, kind of the same thing. They'll take Mylar jigs, they'll take little bucktail jigs, live shrimp underneath a popping cork. If you want to go the kind of inexpensive route, you can take a drinking straw and from like McDonald's, cut it down to about 4 inches, slip it down over like a number two treble hook, and run a piece of 50-pound monofilament through that on up to a popping cork, or if you can find them, the clear bobbers. I don't know if you guys have ever seen clear bobbers before, but the clear bobbers work real well for that. What we usually do is we drill a real small hole in the clear bobber, put a little bit of water or a little bit of mineral spirits or something in it just to give it a little bit of weight, and hurl that out as far out as you can get it, pop it a couple of times as fast as you possibly can, and they'll come up and blast that straw, and you can get your limit of fish. I believe it's still 15 fish per person, and I'm pretty sure it's still 12 inches at the fork of the tail. So if you're looking for something to do here in the next couple of months, McDonald's rigs, Bass Pro, yeah. You can go and do that. It's a lot of fun. And you know, it's something I think that anybody can do. They're not a hard fish to target. You know, you just get out there and watch the surface, you'll see little glass minnows getting busted, you'll see a shower, a finger mullet or whatever, and you know you're pretty much in the right area. Unfortunately, over here, in order to really find them, you'll see gill netters off the coast that gill net the things. So you know, that's another little tip. If you see the gill net boats around, then you know you can go out there and find the Spanish mackerel. Rob, do you target Spanish mackerel over on your coast?
Yeah, actually, this time of year is really good on over here. And what we do is they'll tend to be in deeper water. Sometimes what I mean by deeper water is, 10 to 20. And usually along the edges of those, you can find them. And I like a Meps silver spoon, a little bit on the smaller side. And you just, you're working that thing fast as you can reel it, man. They seem to respond, because I've been doing that kind of stuff and just kind of jigging a spoon along, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't until I sped the thing up that started getting bit. So that's definitely, you got to work it fast. Spoon fly, you know, is another, once again, you got to strip it fast, though. Speed is, Mirrodines will catch Spanish Macs. They're fun fish to catch, man. They don't really get that big, but they're fun.
Yeah, most of the average size fish we see over here are anywhere from that 12-inch fork, sometimes a little bit smaller, on up to 22, 23 inches. Sometimes you get them a little bit bigger than that. But I'll tell you what we do catch over here that will confuse you is small kingfish. A lot of times whenever you take it easy, Greg. Appreciate you coming on, buddy.
A lot of times
whenever you get out there and you start catching those Spanish mackerel, the small kingfish will kind of be right there with them. And if you don't look at the two of them real close, you know, you're just kind of like, oh, there's another Spanish, throw them in the cooler. It's easy to get popped for having that illegal fish. So keep your eyes peeled. Look for those little yellow spots that'll be all over them. And the little black, you know, outline on that dorsal fin is a good telltale sign that you've got a Spanish mackerel, not a kingfish. Do you guys, Chip, have you ever done much Spanish mackerel fishing?
Oh yeah, man, that's a fun fish for the kids, man. I mean, you just drag something silvery just outside the first bar along the beach, and you just tear them up. I'm surprised that you're saying they're small kings. I would wonder if there might be some Ciro mackerel fish in that mix over there on the East Coast.
No, you know what? I've never caught a Ciro mackerel up here. I know guys that get them down south when they're fishing for the Spanish down there, like off of Fort Pierce and to the south of that. I've never run into them. You can definitely tell they're a small kingfish. You know, they have no markings on their sides or whatever. But I've caught several of them right off the jetty. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, we just use, you know, spoons, anything flashy, you know, draw their attention. And but they're a lot of fun. And I actually, I think they're tastier than a king. I don't like eating kings. But the Spanish are a little tastier.
Yeah, I like Spanish mackerel a lot, and they're really, really good. One of my favorite ways to cook them is a little bit of lemon pepper mixed in with some panko breadcrumbs and fry them for just a few seconds and pull them out, just enough to brown those breadcrumbs and put them on a sesame seed bun there, and go to town, man. Those things are delicious. And but I don't eat them if I have to freeze them. I won't eat them. I'll give them away to somebody. That's one of the things about a mackerel is once you freeze it, it's unless you vacuum seal
it. Cat food.
Yeah, it's cat food after that. Yeah. You can't even smoke it and make it taste good, and it's really hard to keep lit. So, but
big papers too, right?
Yeah, newspaper. There it is. Thanks, buddy. We actually do. I've actually done poor man's lobster with kingfish, and it's not bad. Where you just take it, cut it into small chunks, and drop it into a pot of boiling water with some Old Bay seasoning. And as soon as the chunks start to float, you kind of dip them out, dip them in some butter, salt and pepper, and call it a day. It's really good.
Got to be fresh off the boat for that, though, man.
Yeah. You can't take a slab of kingfish, freeze it, and then expect for it to be edible at all. I wouldn't even feed it to Rob. After freezing.
Thanks.
No problem, buddy. Come on, thanks, man. I've been getting my chops broken all night. I had to throw it around a little bit. Yeah, it's cool.
Hey, you know, I like to smoke Spanish mackerel. And what you do is make fish dip out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably last year, had a good recipe on the blog there for them. So they're good that way, man. I don't know if I've ever had them the way that you're talking about, though. But sounds good.
Yeah, they're really good. They get real thick up here around Port Canaveral. Again, those gill netters will go out there and catch them by the thousands. And last year, we actually had an amazing run of Spanish mackerel where they were so thick, you look over the side of the jetty or look off the side of the kayak, and they were just everywhere. You can see them just swimming in big, huge schools. It was awesome. And you can basically catch as many of them as you wanted to. But, Mark, appreciate you tuning in, buddy. Thanks for showing up. But, yeah, good stuff. There's, guys, check out Mark Wheeler's show. He's got Luther from Yak Attack going to be a special guest. That's the Wednesday night show. So it'll be a good show, of course. And Rob shows tomorrow night, 8 o'clock Eastern.
Yay.
Good job, Mark. Good job,
yay,
Rob. What else? There's something else I wanted to talk about tonight. Now I can't think of it. I don't know. I guess I'll just end it with that then. Go ahead and, like I say, guys, I appreciate Fly2 Flyline coming on and giving us a little bit of history about what they got going on, when they started and all that kind of fun stuff. Check out their lines. They look pretty interesting. Definitely going to be shooting him an email and seeing what they're all about. I'll have to do a review on it for Yak Angler and actually write something this time. Check out Flytooth Fly. It's flytooth.net. Again, flytooth.net. That was Jason. Their telephone number is 800-652-5234. Check out yakangler.com, your ultimate kayak fishing resource for all things kayak fishing related. Quick update on the score. 14-6, New York Giants are up in the second. So there you go. Check out Orlando Kayak Fishing Club. Free club to join if you're in the Central Florida area. Good people. They got a forum on their website. It's got a lot of good information. Check those guys out. Check out Rob DeVore's blog, A Bad Backcast. I don't know why I can't ever say that right, Rob. You need to change your name.
You did fine.
RobABadBadcast.com. Check him out. Listen to all of our shows. We appreciate all your support. Tomorrow night is Rob at 8 o'clock. I believe, have we officially done away with the evening show, Chip?
The Tuesday show, the Tuesday evening show?
Yeah.
The late show?
Yeah.
This Tuesday will be the last one, and then it'll be combined on, they'll be combined West Coast show on a Friday night.
There you go.
So we'll just be having 5 a week, not twice on Tuesday. That was intense, man.
That was ridiculous. Yeah, you heard it here first.
No, here's something you got to see, man. I'm just jumping over to, you know, to put some more stuff on your Facebook page, and up pops this recent post by Kayak Kevin. I don't know if you guys have seen it yet, but there's a dude in the water with a red fish that's just as big as he is, and he's it looks like he's trying to revive the redfish, and he's dragging it through, swimming with it in the water, and it looks as big as the guy is. It's not Kevin. It's somebody else, but you got to check his page out, man. It is sick.
Cool.
That's the biggest redfish I've ever seen in my life.
I'll check it out. That's awesome. There you go. You heard it here first. The late show, the 10 o'clock Eastern show on Tuesday night, will have its last airing tomorrow, and then Isaac is going to join Spiker over there on the West Coast Friday night, 8 o'clock Eastern show. Of course, we've got Mark Wheeler, who's going to be raring to talk to Luther from Yak Attack on Wednesday night, 8 o'clock Eastern. Thursday, 8 o'clock Eastern, the Godfather, Chip Gibson. He will be the tree hugger himself. He will be talking all things kayak fishing related at the round table of Buzzard's Row. It's fun times for everybody. So, yeah.
You can hardly wait after we gave you such a whipping tonight, man.
Oh, you just, trust me, I'm going to be thinking of all kinds of fun things to say to you, sir, and everybody else. And while I'm tying flies. I will be tying flies, Mr. Becker. God, you're like the silent assassin. You know what? You're Chuck Norris, sir. You're Chuck Norris. Coming out of left field while he's tying flies. You just don't even hear him coming. You know, that's awesome.
You can't see it because this is radio, but I'm actually in the crane posture right now. So.
I believe you, sir. With your white and black bandana tied around your forehead, Karate Kid style. I got one more caller coming in. Hold on 1 second. It's a 757 area code.
Hey.
Hey.
Am I on? Hey, guys, it's Kayak Kevin.
Hey, what's up, Kevin?
That picture that you're all talking about, that was Lee reviving a 49-inch red. A friend of ours caught it in a boat.
That is sick.
Yeah. A friend of ours caught it in a boat, and he dropped it in the water, and, you know, he didn't get a good grip on it to revive it, so Lee just jumped in the water and swam with it. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is awesome.
You should say that kid, that is just like, I just shared it on your page there, Chuck.
Yeah,
I
mean, I'm looking at it.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Yeah, that's off the chain, man.
Cool. That's why I just wanted to chime in and let you give a little backstory. I've just been posting stuff up on Facebook, bringing stuff from my site over to Facebook. So people who, you know, who are on Facebook, they usually don't go to your site. You know, they want to see all that stuff right there. So I'm throwing all that stuff, updating my Facebook site. I just wanted to chime in and tell that little story before I haven't gotten the descriptions and all that stuff up yet.
Plug your site, buddy.
Oh, well, kayakkevin.com. Thank you.
No problem. Go ahead, guys. Check that out. He's got some new video. He got a new video coming out, and he's also got a couple of his older videos that are on there that are good stuff. Kayak Kevin is definitely one of the all-knowings from that area of Virginia Beach. Cool.
I appreciate it, guys.
No, appreciate you calling.
I'm always listening. I call in there once in a while. But
that's cool, man. I appreciate it.
Cool. I'll let you guys go. Thanks.
All right, buddy. See ya. There you go. 49-incher. That's a big fish. That's a big fish. That fish looks much bigger than 49 inches. That's awesome. Good stuff.
That's like a 12-year-old kid in the water with him, man. I mean, that is a big-looking fish.
It is a big fish. My biggest red out of the kayak's 52. 52 inches. And that thing was a pig. And, yeah, that fish looks bigger than the one I caught. The kid must be like 4'3". But, anyhow, awesome. Well, guys, again, I appreciate everybody tuning in and sticking around with me. All jokes aside, I appreciate everyone's comments in the chat room as always. It's fun to get folks involved, and whether or not you're making fun of me or just, talking to each other during the show keeps things lively. Rob, I appreciate you being here, buddy, as always. Chip, Mr. Becker, I'm sharpening up my ninja stars for you, bud. And, yeah, that's it. Check out my website, chuckskayakadventures.com. If you want to hit me up, if you have any questions that I can hopefully answer for you, feel free to send me an email. It's chuckskayakadventures@hotmail.com. Hit me up on Facebook. And other than that, come check us out at Handler Fish and Supply, Port Canaveral, for all things fishing related. Guys, that's it. I'm done. I've got nothing left to talk about. Trey and Logan, boys, sleep through the night. Let daddy get some rest. I love you. Talk to you guys later. Thank you very much. See you.